Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Devin McCoy, and this is the Dirt Bike Journals. Welcome back, everyone. For those of you that are new, the Dirt Bike Journals is a podcast for dirt bikers by dirt bikers. And here we share stories about our dirt bikes. So if you have a story or anything about dirt bikes you'd like to share with me, please reach out through Instagram or Facebook. You can also send an email to thedirtbikejournals@gmail.com. Now, let's listen to today's guest.
Matt, welcome to the Dirt Bike Journals. Thanks for taking a minute. Tell me a little bit about your podcast before we get started. All Automotive, right?
Yeah.
Let's hear about that. How did that start, and what was the impetus for that?
Well, I've been in the automotive industry for, all my life. And I was thinking one time, and I can back the truck up just a little bit further.
All right, how's that?
Hey, that sounds pretty good. Made your voice even a little bit deeper. Nice.
All right, there we go. All right, must be when I went away from to go to the store or something, I guess.
I don't know. Did you get all your errands run today?
Yeah. Had that function all morning, and then we got back, and it's a little chilly here today in Michigan, so.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, it's 85 degrees here, so.
Nice and early.
Yeah.
I know, yeah. That's strange.
Oh, cool. Yeah. But hey, thanks for reaching out to me, by the way. That's pretty cool. A lot of people aren't really into kind of putting themselves out there to talk on a podcast that thousands of people are going to listen to.
All right. I just thought, you know, I've been trying to advertise my podcast, and I've made a couple of friends along the way. And
yeah.
when I did my last advertisement with my hosting site, it matches up my podcast with people's podcasts that are similar.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw yours on there. I was like, oh, Dirt Bike Journals. I'm a dirt biker, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I started listening to your show, and I listened to a couple of them. Anyway, I was like, well, maybe I could reach out and we could cross over and do some stuff like that. I know most guys that ride have a truck or have lifted up their truck or do something. You know what I mean? We all have a
uh-huh.
truck or a trailer, or, you know, we're all yep. tinkerers of some sort, it seems like. But
Yeah, they all kind of run in the same vein for sure.
Yeah.
Well, cool. So how did your podcast get started? When did you decide, you know what, I need a podcast?
Well, when I was, when I got out of high school, I went to college for a couple of years, and I figured out rather quickly that wasn't for me. And, in high school, we had a radio station at our high school, and I was a DJ on there, and
very
any
cool.
occasion that I could get, I was taking study halls and doing whatever I could to go down to the radio station. And the instructor there was a really cool guy. I still talk to him to this day.
They have an instructor?
Yeah, we had the radio station was 88.3 WKHR, and
uh-huh.
we were on air during the school day and after hours until, I think our license was only until like 8 o'clock or something like that. So
okay.
we had to sign off. So after school, we had those of us that were able to come in and do our specialty radio shows. And of course I had a rock metal show with a buddy of mine in school.
TJ.
So there was a lot of Metallica and AC/DC and all kinds of stuff that we played on our show. And
oh, that's
anyway,
cool.
So I was bit by this kind of broadcasting bug at an early age. And after I got out of high school, you know, the thing back in the mid to late 80s was everybody went to college, and everybody did go to college, but not all of us went through it all the way.
Yeah.
So when I decided that college wasn't for me. I said, well, I'm just going to, I gotta do something. And working at the oil change, Quick Lube oil change place wasn't really cutting it. So I thought, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to this accelerated broadcasting school that's in the Cleveland area and graduate and see what I can come up with. So I graduated from the Connecticut School of Broadcasting, and I moved up to Michigan to get a job in broadcasting. But I had to have a job in the meantime to try to find another job. So I got a job at a Chevy dealer. So I got a job at a Chevy dealer that was local to where my area was. And I moved to this area because this is where my dad grew up, in this area in mid-Michigan. And so I got a job at the dealership. I was a service advisor in the service department. So I talked to the customers that came in. And then 3 or 4 years later, I got promoted to the service manager. So I did that, oh gosh, for too long.
Well, and they pay you pretty well, I hear, right?
Well, yeah, to take crap from everybody, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, that does suck.
Yeah. It was okay. So it paid the bills, built the house, you know, made my family. And then I got to be, about 2006. I worked there from 94 until 2006.
Wow.
I decided that I wanted to go out and do something on my own. And I got to my wit's end. And then I found out that the owner of the dealership that was trying to sell it. He was in his late 70s, and he really didn't need to be there. We were all taking good care of him anyway. And we were always pretty much on the same page as far as what was going on. And he was telling me, I'm going to do it till I'm 80. And if I don't, what if I sold the place before then? So I was like, okay, middle management gets fired in those situations when new ownership comes in. They're like, yeah, we've got our people and thanks, have a nice day. Or you can get a demotion and do this. And it's like, no, I'm not doing that. So I started my, own auto repair shop. And
cool.
It's grown in.
Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I knew how to do it. I knew how to run the place and I knew how to work on cars somewhat. And I was certified because along the way, my owner was like, well, you need to be certified. In Michigan, we need to be certified mechanics. So I became a certified mechanic and I'm still a master ASC certified technician.
Very cool.
And so I started G-Force Automotive in 2007. So it was in the tail end of 2006. I pretty much took December off and got my game plan for 2007. And I opened up in an old Gulf gas station. It was just a two bay, there was no gas anymore. So it was a repair shop, and it was in a location that was a revolving door. And I heard a lot of people say that, not very many people have been able to stay in there. So we were there for 5 years. And then there was a opportunity that came up in the mecca of downtown Jackson, one of the busiest streets in Jackson. It was in a closed down Meineke. So it was a four bay store. Yeah. And so I went from doing everything myself, calling all the customers, working on the cars, taking all the appointments, paying all the bills, to now I have 4 technicians, 2 service advisors, 1 support staff, and 1 part-time kid.
Heck yeah, man. That's kind of the dream, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's worked out pretty well. And now I'm to the point where I can pretty much come and go as I please. But I'm there a lot. I'm really there a lot. So it's nice. I never dreamed that it would get to this point, and it's just been really nice. So I've got some spare time on my hand, and with having this communications degree, finally, after 40 years, I get to use my broadcasting degree, and I was telling my wife, I should start because my friends have always told me, they're like, oh, you should write a book, just write a book on all the stuff that you've learned and all the stuff about being a repair shop owner. And
all right.
And I was like, so that's what my spot says, is I've been in the automotive industry for 30 years. So I thought I'd give back. I was going to write a book, but I started my podcast instead.
Well, it's like an audio book, technically.
Yeah, really. So what it is basically is it's, you know, cliff notes for the customer to come in, or, you know, if you're trying to figure out what you should look for when you're purchasing a used vehicle, that's one of my episodes.
Yep.
I talk to industry leaders and CEOs. My most recent episode was with a really nice guy, Roger Clapp. He is the CEO of the website Whip Flip. And what they do is they're in certain areas of the country, certain states. They're not in all states yet, but he's working on it. They just buy your car. You got an extra car, or you don't know what to do with it, or, you know, you've had a unfortunate death in the family, and now you've got mom or dad's car or grandma's car or whatever. And you call them up, they give you an offer. The guy comes out, gives you the check, picks up the car, and away they go.
That's,
you don't have
sweet.
To sell
That's
it
nice
on
business model.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty, I thought it was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So
hey, I wanted to ask
I've
you a
having,
question about yeah. Backing up just a second here. When you took over that Meineke place, what kind of capital, and it's a big leap, you know, when you go from you chasing down everybody, maybe you've got one helper in the shop, to four technicians. Did you take that year and accrue all of those people? I mean, that had to require some capital and some real forethought. How was that process?
You know, that was a real difficult thing to do. And where I was, I thought I was most, where I thought I was lucky is along the way of being a service manager at the Chevy dealer, I'd met a lot of people. And one of those people was one of the faculty members at a local community college where they had an automotive program. And he kept twisting my arm to come over there and teach a class. So I was an adjunct faculty member at Jackson Community College for a number of years. And
very cool.
I taught intro, and I taught AC and brakes and steering and suspension. So I met a lot of kids. So I met a lot of the students. And it wasn't just young kids. And that was back when, they were giving all these people money to go to school, I guess, that were displaced workers or something like that. I forget what the name of that program was, but I had a good, you know, cross-section of people. So you had a lot of different personalities, which was nice. So I was fortunate enough to know a lot of the kids and a lot of the students, my past students, and they knew I ran a shop, so that I made a couple of phone calls, and I knew I was going to need a couple more people, but the place had been closed for quite some time, and the guy that owned it was just holding out for somebody to give him the right number. When we had our difference of opinion with the landlord where we were, he kind of really forced our hand, I guess, forced my hand. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I had to think about, okay, it's got four bays. We're coming from two bays. We had, you know, it was just me talking to the customers. And then I had two guys, I added another guy, and I hired, I thought, well, I can run the front, you guys run the shop, and we'll see how it goes. And we moved over there March, like 10 years ago, I think. And it was a little rocky at first, because it's a considerable distance from where our shop was, as far as logistically getting to the old shop, like the customers around there, there was lots of rooftops within a half mile, a mile. You know what I mean? You know, there were a lot of homes relatively close to where that shop was. It was just like all of a sudden on the corner, there's an old gas station. You're like, oh, wow,
right,
that's really
right.
Weird. You know, and then we were in front of a grocery store and there was a gas station and a Subway real close. And it was just like a small extension of the, you know, south part of Jackson. So when we moved over to the, you know, where I'd say the Mecca or the, you know, the busiest part of town, it's right off I-94. There's everything there. Burger King, you know, McDonald's.
Yeah, right in the middle of the business district.
You know, right. I got two huge tire stores within a half a mile. I got, you know, Bell Tire and Discount Tire, and there's another muffler shop, and there's Midas, and you know, there's several different shops within, you know, half a mile radius. It's like, what are you, stupid?
Right. Go ahead.
So it took some planning, but I took my resources from Jackson College, and I called a couple of kids, and they were like, yeah, let's do it. And, you know, and one of the guys, I guess, that was made the transition with us, he's still with us. The other couple of guys have moved on, and then, but it's kind of ebbs and flows. There's, you know, people come and go, and it's fun.
Well, that's pretty good. I mean, being a small business owner myself, I really understand the part about having your employees kind of revolve a little bit. They go, come and go, but you got the couple of them that just stick around for a long time, and it's hard to go out and find a guy, and you don't know if he's going to have the right personality that's going to fit with the rest of the crew, or if he's got the common sense you're looking for to kind of look for things and automatically know what to do. Those are qualities that are really hard to find right off the bat in an interview. You kind of got to feel them out for a little bit. So, I mean, the fact that you've got four great technicians is awesome. It sounds like you're doing things right.
Yeah. And a couple of the, two of the kids that I've got, and I call them kids cause they are, you know, they're my son's age really. Right. And you know, they're in their early 20s, and I got them from, they were co-op students that came in and did, you know, 2.5 hours here and there while they were in auto mechanics class or, automotive technology, they call it. So, took them on. They decided to stay and do it. And then I've got another kid, my part-time kid, actually, is the one who's currently in that program.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick is the guy that was still with, has still been with me since we were over on the south side of town. The guy I originally hired, Scott, he went on to bigger and better things at the dealership in town, the Chevy dealership in Jackson. I worked at another Chevy dealer. Anyway,
okay.
But now Scott's working for Chrysler at the Proving Grounds in Chelsea, which is not too far from where I live. And, gosh, he's doing really well. He's working in the dyno room doing proving emissions testing and stuff like that. So I'm really proud of him.
Neat. And, that sounds cool.
Yeah. So like I say, it's just been one heck of a ride. And so I thought, you know, why not give back and tell the customers, you know, help
yeah.
the hints and things like that. And my podcast and go over things and
yeah.
You know,
and how fortunate for you to be able to do that, to have that kind of time, set yourself up in a way that allows you to do it. That's so fortunate.
Yeah. And it's hard, you know, cause some, I only do it like every month and I'm just like, what am I going to talk about this month? What am I going to talk about this month? It's like, I thought I'd have an endless, you know, ability to have content, but it's hard if you're not talking about a last week's NASCAR race or,
right,
like that. So I gotta come up with some stuff. So coming up, I got another, I've had like three restoration podcast with my brother. My brother's a restoration guru. He's restored like 4 or 5 different cars all on his own. He's a, you know, he's self-taught kind of guy.
Oh, cool.
But he's a banker. He's a underwriter for a bank in the Cleveland area. But him and his buddies have worked on cars and done all that since, you know, like I say, since we were kids. So.
All right. Well, that'll be a neat episode. I'd like to hear that one.
Yeah. So I got him and his friend that are going to be on the next episode, and it's going to be vehicle restoration episode 4.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, I'm going to look for it.
Yeah.
Let's shift gears here. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, I usually start out with where you're from, but we already know that. You're up in Michigan.
Yep.
How'd you get into dirt bikes? How's that fit into your life?
Well, my brother is older than me, and he got the motorcycle first. And I want to say he was 13 or something like that. And Dad bought us a 1975 XR75.
Very cool. Good bike.
Yeah. So very friendly, very easy to start.
Mm-hmm.
The low ride height. And I think I was like 11. It was what, 81. So
okay.
We lived on a cul-de-sac street in Ohio, and there was like, I don't know, 15 or 20 houses on the street. And we lived almost down to the end of the street where the turnaround was.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a pretty decent sized yard. So we would ride the motorcycle around the yard. And Dad also got us a go-kart that we rode around a little bit. And we actually built that. My dad was an engineer, and he's an aeronautical engineer. So he knew how to build airplanes.
Yeah, he could probably build a couple of things.
Yeah. And so he was in the Navy, and he went to school to be an engineer. And so he brought home this metal and all the stuff, and we got a engine, and we made ourselves a go-kart. So that wasn't really good enough. So we got a motorcycle. And then I think after a year or two of watching my brother ride it around or whatever, I was just like, hey, can I ride it? He's like, you can't even, you won't even be able to do it. So I took right off and rode it around, no problem. And they were all flabbergasted at 11 years old or something. I could ride this thing around. And
yeah, it's still a pretty big, heavy bike for what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were, you know, metal tank, metal fenders.
Yeah.
This was like a tank kind of motorcycle, but
yeah.
It was nice. It was cool to learn on something like that. And eventually that's the one that I ended up getting hurt on. Well, I didn't really get hurt, but
what happened?
I got hit by a car with that motorcycle.
Ooh.
So it was not a fun deal. It was like a year later. I remember, you know, very clearly that it was Halloween night, 1982. Got home from school, and I was like, oh man, I'm going to ride the bike around for a little bit and then get ready for trick or treating. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think the reason our street ended up being a cul-de-sac street is because there was a natural gas pipeline that went across the bottom of it. So, they didn't want to develop it any further, so they just stopped the road.
Okay.
But we had trails and sled riding hills and all kinds of stuff. And this natural gas pipeline had a 2-track down it. So they very rarely were out there, and nobody ever really bothered us back then about riding around back there. There was a couple of neat little hill climbs that we would ride up and down, and of course, all the neighbor kids had motorcycles of some sort. So we were always back there doing stuff. Right. So I took it upon myself to go a different way. Instead of turning left, I turned right. And I said, well, I'll just go down where this comes out on Taylor May Road, and I'll just do a U-ey and come back, and then I'll go trick-or-treating. So I'd gone that way, and then I come to the road on this two-track, and I look to the left, and I don't know if that was the wrong thing to do or the right thing to do, but I always look to the left first, because obviously that lane of traffic is on this side of the road.
Okay.
And I'm left-handed. I think that's kind of a thing, too. So I looked to the left, didn't see anybody. It was kind of up a hill. It wasn't a blind hill or anything like that. And then I pull out to just to do a U-ey in the road, really. And I pulled out, and then all I heard was the horn.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so all I heard was the horn, and then she hit the bike and threw me, I don't know, onto the other side of the road. And
of course,
right,
she hit you.
Thankfully,
in the front tire,
didn't
tire.
Run me over. She hit me right in the right dead on. I mean, right
oh,
in my.
Oh shoot!
She hit me, but she pinched my left ankle between the case of the motorcycle and her bumper.
Oh.
And then it threw me off, and then I think I did like a somersault in the air or something, and I landed. And I always rode with my helmet on, too. Remember that, kids. Oh, ride with your helmet
smart.
On.
Yep.
And I looked up, and I was like, oh, crap. She rode over my bike. She was, I mean, the XR75 was, like, underneath the front of the car.
Oh, no.
And so, you know, as you're 12 years old, the only thing I'm thinking about is the bike.
Is the bike okay?
I was like, oh, you killed my bike. Okay, so I go to get up, and I couldn't, you know, I went to put weight on my left foot, and I was just like,
oh, no,
I fell down. And, you know, the girl that hit me, she's hysterical, and she's, oh, my God, you know, right?
Yeah.
And then ambulance to the hospital.
Oh, shoot.
So for whatever reason, one of my lives was spent right there.
Yeah,
I don't know
man.
How I came out of that. I don't know how I came out of that with just a sprained ankle, but that's
that
all
it.
I had. That was
oh,
it.
Oh, man, I was expecting to say it was, like, shattered or something.
No broken bones, nothing. They were like, oh, because I was like, I can't put weight on it. And it hurt. I mean, it was bad.
Yeah.
So what was that, sixth grade or something like that? I don't remember what grade I was in. But I just knew I was on crutches for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm. Man, you got lucky.
So, yeah. And then thankfully, my mom didn't put her foot down hard enough, I guess. So I ultimately, when I got back from the hospital, my brother and his friends were just like, good job, little Claw. You killed the bike. So I was like, okay.
Yeah, I'm fine, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm all right. Just have my air cast on. It bent the frame. I had two shocks in the back. With the one with the impact side one was looked like a boomerang.
Oh no!
And yeah, it was all bent up. It still ran, believe it or not. It ran.
Motor's fine.
It was crooked. My brother and his friend Tony took it apart, and I don't know, I think they got another shock for it or something, and it was, I don't know, it was like the seat was to the right and the handlebars were to the left.
Oh, it, no.
Yeah, it kind of dog-tracked after that.
Yeah.
It still was able to go down the road, but it wasn't something you want to, you know, ride around the yard and be safe on, really.
Right.
So I don't really remember what happened to that bike, but I think my mom and dad or my brother, they sold it to somebody for parts or something. The engine still ran and everything like that. But then, my dad had came to us. Ooh, I don't know. I don't remember. It was like 83 the following year, I think. And he said, if you guys get good grades all year long, I'll get you guys new bikes.
Plural, new bikes.
Yeah. And I was like, what? Really? So then, yeah, it was 83. It was over that, I want to say it was over that summer, or he bought them right after we got out of school. We went to the Honda dealer and I got an XR100, and my brother got an XR200.
Wow.
And
man, cool bikes. XRs are just,
yeah,
just rad.
Yeah. So I was because of the XR75, we were just like, these are really good bikes. And in 83, it was not too much difference. The only really big problem with that bike was the points.
The what?
The ignition points.
Hmm.
You know, that would open and close and create the spark.
Mm-hmm.
Send the signal to the coil, so the coil sparks, so the spark plug. So after riding the bejeebus out of it, I guess I should have put points in it or something. I had to adjust and sand them down every now and then, I guess. 'Cause you'd be riding it, and it would just die.
Just flame out.
Yep, it would just nothing. And then you're like, oh, probably doesn't have any spark. So take the side cover off, roll it around the top dead center, and look in there, and oh, okay. Shove a little, what did I use? I had like a little matchbook or something that I cut with scissors so I could stick it in there and adjust it. And then away we went.
Wow, man. The youth, you know, decades ago knew how to do so much more stuff. I hope I can pass that on to my kids. Like, okay, if this happens, here's how you fix it, you know?
Yeah.
If it came to ignition and timing and stuff, I just, like, your dad, help.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I always had that gift, I guess, to tinker
That's
with
cool.
stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Well, I think the timing chain broke on that XR75, and I fixed that.
Oh, man. That's pretty cool. Timing stuff, just there's so many things you can do wrong.
Yeah, I don't know.
Timing
kind of
sketches me out a bit. So,
yeah.
So where did you go after the XR? Sorry, go ahead.
After the XR100.
Yeah, what happened after the XR100? Where'd you go? Where'd you get to?
Like I said, I rode that bike until. I still had that bike for quite a while. And then I got my driver's license when I was 16. So then it was just like, oh, dirt bike. Now I can tinker with cars.
Yeah. On to bigger stuff.
On to bigger stuff. But I still, my buddies rode and we still rode around. There was a.
What was your car when you turned 16? Or did you just wait a little while? What'd you do?
Well, I had the. I really wanted a classic car because all of us were into cars and motorcycles, so it didn't really. So we were all into classic and weren't as classic as they are now. But I stumbled across a '69 Chevelle SS that I somehow talked my dad into it, and promptly blew that up. On the drive home from buying it. Yeah.
What?
So, yeah. We went and bought it, and I drove it home, and the next day I got it out, and I was just like, why is it knocking? And I didn't know much about engines and stuff back then. And I knew this older guy that lived across the street from us on that cul-de-sac street, because we had moved in 87. We moved off the cul-de-sac street to another cul-de-sac street because our parents put up a new house.
Mm-hmm.
And I still had the XR, but I had this car now. And then one of the guys that was older, way older than us, I had talked to him a couple, you'd see him every now and then. And I said something to him, he'd come over and he's like, oh, it's got spun a bearing. Yeah, you need to pull this out and do it.
Oh, bearings.
Yeah. Some rod bearings had spun. Quite a few of them.
Holy crap, anyway. Man.
Yeah, so I tinkered with that. And then, gosh, I sold the 100 because it was smoking a lot. I think it needed a cylinder head. The valve guys were all wore out, so it smoked really bad when it ran. And my brother had gone off to college, and he sold his XR200. So we were my buddies that I used to ride with a lot came to me, and they were like, look, you got to get a bike. And he had my buddy Andy had an 85 XR250R, the one that's got the dual carburetors and the four valves.
Yep.
That bike was a lot of fun to, yeah. So we would go riding and I would follow along in the car and then he'd ride around and then let me ride it a little bit. And then we finally I stumbled across a very inexpensive Husqvarna CR. It was like a 125 two-stroke.
Ooh, that's cool. And adding some pepper to the lineup.
Yeah. So
that's cool.
That was interesting. And this guy that I was telling you about that lived across the street from us, he rode Husqvarnas and... That's how I kind of knew about those bikes a little bit. And he had one of those Husky 430s.
Not a two-stroke, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was? Holy cow.
One of those big open bikes, you know, just brrr, big time. Uh-huh. You twist the throttle, it's like wheelie instantly.
So how was the difference? How'd that feel to you?
Well, I got it running and I actually took the cylinder head off and checked and made sure I honed the cylinder out and I put a new piston and ring in it and got a spark plug and gasket kit and put it all back together. Two strokes of it. And that vintage aren't that hard.
Yeah.
So put it all back together and it ran really good. But it was just difficult to go down, you know, we had two tracks pipelines. We had two track power lines that we would ride on. And then there was a sand pit or a gravel pit that had been abandoned for a lot of years.
Okay.
And the people that lived next door to it, we had asked them, hey, do you mind if we ride over here? We don't want to bother you. And they're like, no, people ride back there all the time. It's fine.
Cool.
And the people that own it are never here. They're never doing anything with it, blah, blah, blah. So we rode around there forever.
Perfect.
And
private area.
Right. Until, they decided to extend the far end of the highway through where we lived, and then I kind of disturbed it all.
Dang it.
Yeah. But, you know, progress. The highway that goes from, you know, Youngstown to where we grew up. Anyway, so, yeah, the Husky was interesting. It didn't like water, if I remember that right. There was a stream we went through that it got wet, and it didn't like that.
Oh, shoot.
But it was very, it was
vintage.
Were
you immediately hooked on it? Like, two strokes the best, or was it still like, like four strokes better?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't really sold on it because, for me, it was the not knowing the power band and, sometimes it was just like, for lack of, I'm sure it's been done on your show before, but it was like, what?
Yep.
And you know, and once you start tinkering with stuff and we got the suspension to where it needed to be, it was just like crazy. It was just like instantly go, what?
Yeah, God. When the power valve just opens up, it's all or nothing.
Yeah, so it's kind of fun. And then that was right around the time, so we've made it to the 90s, mid-90s, and I was at the time running the Quick Lube place. I was a manager of a Quick Lube place, and my buddies got me to take that Saturday off, and we went riding, and my other friend was a three-wheeler person and still is to this day. yeah, he's got a Honda 350X.
Okay.
And he bought a 250R, the two-stroke one.
Yeah, yeah, those are cool.
Yeah. So,
dangerous, but cool.
Yep, he's collecting those now. We're at the age where it's not really appropriate to ride one of those, I guess. A 250R.
But they're cool to have.
They're just, you know, you sit there and drink beer and talk about them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's kind of fun. So then, you know, like I say, we were about the mid-90s there, and then I moved up to Michigan, and I left a lot of my stuff at my parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things I had left at my buddy Dave's house, and my buddy Dave had called me, and he's like, hey, man, there's some guy that really wants this Husqvarna of yours. How much do you want for it? And I said, I don't remember what we sold it for, but he made an offer that was decent enough for me, and I was like, okay, took it. And yeah, so I didn't have anything, and my one friend was hounding me about doing this hair scramble with him in Pennsylvania. And I said, look, Andy, I don't have a bike. He goes, oh, I got a CR250, and he goes, I can get somebody to loan me a bike. Just let me know if you can come. I said, all right, I will. So he had called me back up, and this was another terrible story, but this one's kind of gnarly when you have to take your friend to the hospital.
All right, let's hear it.
Yeah, so we go to this hair scramble, and I had just met my wife, and we were dating, and I said, well, I'll take you down. I want to introduce you to my parents, but my buddy wants to go riding in Pennsylvania. I don't think it's any big deal or anything like that. He's got a bike for me to ride. I'll just grab my helmet and my gear and stuff, and we'll go. So I show up, and he's got an XR600 for me to ride. And I was like, dude, I can't ride this thing.
Thing's a pig.
This thing's heavy as hell. I said, I'm literally 5'5". I can't ride a bike like this. There's no way.
No way. That's a freaking tall bike to start with.
And it's high off the ground. Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, well, I can get it started, but geez, you know, you got to put the kickstand down or something if I stall it. You know, and it's like, oh, quit being a baby. All right, fine. We'll go riding. So we show up at this place, and he's got the bikes on his trailer, and I got his girlfriend was with him too. And so we take off, and I was just like, well, how long is this? He's like, oh, it's a poker run. Well, these legs, I mean, this was like through people's backyards and through fields and through woods. This was the weirdest thing I've ever rode on in my life.
How many miles were the lap?
I don't remember, but I felt like we rode like 10 miles before we stopped, and they were giving you cards. So that's why they call it a poker run. You grab a card, and then you stick it in your pocket, and then at the end of five cards of this 50-mile thing, right, or whatever it was,
right,
you got your five cards. But we didn't make it to the third. We only made it through two.
Oh, no.
Because we were coming through this guy's field, and, you know, there's arrows and signs and stuff like that. And all these people around this area were really into this. They probably still run it in this area. I don't know. So we're coming through this field, and Andy was in front of me and roosts me with mud, and I'm like, really? Okay. And I swing out to the right, and then we're coming down this the end of this guy's field, and the arrows are like, you got to drive down the road for a little while. It's a dirt road. So, and you got to know my friend Andy. He's just like all or nothing.
Okay.
And he wraps it up, and he's gone. What? Took off.
Mm-hmm.
And I come around and, you know. And it was around a turn because I couldn't see him. You know, he took off and I couldn't see him. And I come around the corner and he's on the ground and his bike is, he had hit a rock. There was a big enough rock in the road where his front end washed out. And he, and it totally took him off guard. And he just hit the he hit the ground really hard. And,
oh no.
And I came up on the accident and I got off and I was just like, dude, are you all right? Are you all right? And his helmet was like sideways. So what had happened was is he hit so hard that his helmet had turned and pushed on his eye like really hard or something like that. So it kind of just bruised his eye in reality.
Okay.
But he was just more disoriented than anything else. So I was just like, dude. And it was just like, and his eye started swelling up really bad. So, and
wait,
we were in front of somebody.
Started swelling?
Yeah, like he got punched in the eye, pretty much.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So he was getting a black eye, and I was worried because he was like gibberish speaking to me. And I said, well, can you sit up? Yeah. Okay. You know where you're at? Somewhere in Pennsylvania. Okay. All right. Well, I got his bike up, stood it up, leaned it up against the fence post and got my bike out of the way. And here comes some good Samaritan. Pulls up. You guys all right? Nope. He wiped out. He's hurt pretty bad. He's like, well, hop in the truck. I'll take you guys to the ambulance. So
all right.
There was a guy that came out of the house. He's like, oh, I'll watch their bikes. Okay. So I'm like, sir, I have no idea where I'm at. I'm from Michigan. I have no idea where we are. He goes, oh, I'll take you back over here. Okay.
Cool.
So he took us to a main road where there was an ambulance because they knew that somebody was going to get hurt, apparently.
Right.
Ambulance takes him, away they went. This guy takes me back to get the bikes, helps me load them up in his truck, takes me to where Andy's truck was, helps me load them on to Andy's trailer. Then I've got to go over and break the news to my wife, then girlfriend, that Andy wiped out. You have to go to the hospital. it was a fun first weekend to take my wife down to.
Yeah, no kidding.
To meet my parents. Yeah, I was just like,
we
oh got to
just
gosh.
Make a quick stop at the hospital and then we'll go see my parents.
Right. So quick. let's just say quick was not the hospital was like in the opposite direction of where we wanted to go.
Oh, shoot.
Cleveland was west, and this hospital was east. So the nice guy that helped me out, he's just like, yeah, the hospital is right here. And, you know, of course, this was before, you know, everybody had GPS on your phone. So I was
right.
Like, well, how do you get there? He's like, well, you go out here and you go out here. You know, anyway, we got there. I made sure he was okay. His girlfriend came and picked him up. He had a little trouble getting his motorcycles home, but I was like, well, you know, I'll stick around. I can't go. He lived in Erie, Pennsylvania at the time, so it wasn't a far ride home for them. It
right.
was for me because I lived, you know, 4 hours from Cleveland. This was another 2 hours, so it's like, I'm 6 hours
Shoot.
Away from my house.
Yeah.
In reality, and I have to, you know, go back and tell my wife, like, hey, we've got to go to the hospital and make sure Andy's okay. So Yeah, it was, that was not a fun opportunity, or, you know, that was not a fun ride at all, because the bike was kicking my butt and then he wiped out.
I'm done.
I was done at that point. So
yeah, kind of a rough weekend.
Yeah. So then after that, you know, me and Danny got married in 1998, but we had been dating since 95. So, gosh, it went 97. 97, the two of us got the big idea to buy a jet ski.
No.
So we bought this jet ski, had it for 3 or 4 years or whatever. It was 2000 or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, so she got pregnant with my oldest son, Garrett. And
okay.
We were like, yeah, jet ski's not going to be a good thing for a baby. So I was like, well, I had met this other guy named Bob, and he's into bikes. And he had a Yamaha TT500.
Ooh,
and
cool.
Yeah, that was really a cool bike. He got the thing running and restored it a little bit so that he could ride it around. And I came across another two-stroke, a KX 125. It was an 87. Another thing that didn't run. I had to fix the power valve in it, and I did a piston ring or something in that thing. It didn't run the greatest, but it got me out riding again, which was
sure.
nice.
Yeah, that was the whole goal.
Yeah, which was kind of nice. I mean, I think I only bought that bike for like $500 or something, and put maybe $100 into it and got it running and rode it around. So
you
behind
can't
buy
a blown up bike right now for $500.
Yeah, I know, it's insane what they're going for now.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I was looking at a new CR450F, and I was like, geez.
Yeah, man.
I think
what are you starting at, like nine or something?
Yeah, like $9,000 or something like that. I was just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's
it's better ride itself. Jeez. Better have a seat warmer and hand warmers and
right
air conditioning and everything
for sure. Yeah, air conditioning included. That's gotta be a
right.
stock item.
Yeah. So behind where my friend Bob lived, there's a old abandoned racetrack, a car racetrack.
Okay.
And the pavement
cool.
was still there. Yeah, the pavement was still there, which was kind of neat. But it was banked pretty high, which was kind of cool, too. So we would ride around on the infield. And there had been some people that had piled up some piles of dirt. So there was a couple of jumps. And we I never really rode competitively or anything like that. I rode on some tracks and made a couple of laps. But I was never really had the gumption to go more than a double. Do a double
mm-hmm.
double jump.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's just like, I don't want to bust myself all up. So
right.
That was so. But anyway, the racetrack was pretty banked, pretty steep, so you could just ride up the track and just shoot yourself off into the field on the other end, and it was kind of fun. So you could,
heck yeah.
Yeah, so you didn't have to worry about the dirt washing out, and just ride up the pavement. I mean, the weeds were growing up through the cracks, and you could ride around it, all around it still, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't in any shape for a car to be on or anything like that. But
right. But for dirt bikes, that's prime. That's great.
Yeah. So we still had that jet ski, and then my wife gets pregnant with Garrett. And then I decided to trade the jet ski in on a Kawasaki KLX 300, a four-stroke.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That, and I sold the KX 125 to some young kid or something who bought it one Saturday afternoon. I don't remember.
Yeah,
so that one.
Well, how'd the KLX
that one went away.
Compared
I mean,
to
I,
the others.
Yeah, so the KLX was the I call it the predecessor to the four-stroke KX series four-stroke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it was on the same frame, basically on the same frame as the KX250, but it's the, you know, they put the KLX engine on it, which is they've had for years on that platform.
Right.
So I still have that bike. I bought it
you
brand
new.
You
still have it?
I still have that bike.
Oh, that's yep. cool.
Bought it brand new. I believe it needs the tires changed. I've been riding that bike since I bought it in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And well, a couple of years ago, I had been going. Well, once I bought that bike, let's back up just a little bit. So I bought that bike in 2001 and rode sporadically, and I was still working at the dealership back then. So one of the technicians that worked at the dealership, he rode two-stroke Kawasaki or Suzuki 250, and him and another couple of his friends used to run this motocross circuit.
Mm-hmm.
SJO, it's called locally. And excuse me. So they would ride, it was like at county fairs and stuff. They would put a bunch of dirt hills and make a track out of the infield of the racetrack.
Yeah. And put on a little show.
Yeah. And so they put on a little show. So they have like the little kids, and then they have the 125, the 250, and then they get a couple of, decent A riders from the area. They'd talk them into coming in, and those guys would run around and make everybody look silly.
Yeah.
And so Dave was one of the guys that was one of my techs, and he'd put a racetrack out behind his house and used to ride around that. But the KLX just didn't have the power to get over those triples and doubles. He made a pretty cool tabletop that I could get over that.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable with that because if you miss that one, you're still landing on a flat surface and maybe it's just mm-hmm. kind of a little bumpy ride coming down the other end. But
right.
he had whoops, he had a pit jump, he had all kinds of stuff. And those guys were way crazier than I was, but it was like,
probably
okay,
had crazier bike too.
I can still, yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, they're always like, yeah, go ahead, ride it along. Go ahead, take it.
No. No.
You still four stroke. It gets down to the bottom of the double and it goes, wee, and I go flying. Nope. Sorry. I don't know.
You don't need any of that.
Yeah. I don't need any of that.
So what was your progression of bikes after the kids started showing up?
Well, like I said, I managed to hang on to it. And Garrett, my oldest, he's autistic, so he doesn't, he didn't really ride. He did ride. Mm-hmm. I bought one of those little Pee-wee 50s and he rode it around a little bit. And then I was, you know, trying to teach him how to ride and figure it out. And he didn't realize that he's supposed to keep both hands on the handlebars because he went off the path a little bit and got into some prickers and it grabbed his arm. So he let off, and his right left arm pulled.
Yeah.
He kind of wiped out. Yeah. And he broke his arm. So that wasn't.
Oh, shoot.
So yeah, his mother put her foot down and we got rid of that. And then my youngest rode around a little bit and then that kind of went away for a while. So once Garrett broke his arm, it was not It was just rough, dad riding there for so it was hard to continue with that. So so I had that bike for a lot of years, and then I met this new guy, one of my best friends, Mike. He's got the bike, man. He's got a 98 CR500.
Holy crap, the Holy Grail.
Yeah, so he tells me this one day. He's like, oh, yeah, we should go riding. He goes, I got a bike. And I'm like, yeah. How I met Mike was, Mike is my territory sales manager for one of the parts stores. So he comes into my shop every week to see how we're doing and get stock order for us and order stuff for us. So we struck up a conversation one day about bike riding. So we are the two that usually go on our, and you know, we try to do it twice a year, semi-annual, to go up north, we call it, in Michigan, to some of the ORV trails that they, where they allow you to ride, you know, you buy a sticker and a pass, you put stickers on your bike and you can ride on these ORV trails. And you can ride on the seasonal roads as well. And then they're pretty cool about you riding down the side of the road if you're not messing with anybody. But some of those roads, some of those busy roads in the up north, you really don't want to ride down the side of them. But so we go up to a place, Houghton Lake area, and there's trails, two tracks, there's motorcycle specific trails that are a little too tight for what we're riding nowadays. But so we get on the two tracks with the side by sides now and the guys with the four wheelers, and so we ride on those. So we have a good time with that. But yeah, Mike's got one of the coolest bikes I think somebody could own. And so I'm trying to, you know, obviously keep up with him sometimes with my KLX. You know, he got it pinned in sixth gear and he's just going, burn, go away from this.
Yep, no problem.
Okay, all right. Just wait for me. I'll be there in a little bit.
So is the KLX your main ride?
No, my main ride now is an 06 CR450F.
Okay, that's cool. What do you like to ride the most with that?
Last of the carbureted.
Oh.
And it's a kickstart too. I wish it was, if it was electric start, it would be way better, but I absolutely love that bike. I was looking for something different. I'm like, man, I got to keep something to keep up with Mike, because I can't do this. And I really don't want a two stroke. It
probably does pretty well.
Yeah, it does. I'm surprised. I am really, this thing is, it rips. It's just something else.
Well, shoot, if Supercross riders are using them, they gotta have some power.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you twist it, it goes. And it's totally different from the 300, where you can pull the front end, you can save yourself with throttle, you can... you know, I've saved myself several times with just twisting the throttle, just like, well, I gotta twist it, you know, come around the corner and it kind of washes out a little bit and just give it some throttle and it pulls the front end up and you're, oh, there you go. Unbelievable how much torque it has. It's just crazy. And it's got
Go ahead. Oh, I was saying, I debate whether or not I'm going to go back and get a four stroke, like just have like for a buddy bike, but one that I can go just putt around on the trails with and stuff. I really like my two stroke and the way it feels, but there's something about those four strokes and the engine braking and the low tractability that you can get through things. It sounds so enticing. So I've still got my eyes on a couple. They sound.
What are you riding now?
I have a YZ250X.
Oh, okay. So it's got a light on it and stuff?
No light. It's basically,
the exact same thing as a YZ250 motocross, but it's got wide ratio gearing.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, Honda's doing that.
It's just a little bit different, and the motor's ported just a little bit on the exhaust to allow for more enduro type riding rather than motocross.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, it's a cool bike, yeah. But it's kind of like that 450. There's no e-start on it, but the suspension and the torque and the power is just phenomenal. So it's kind of hard to say, oh, I'll just sell it and find something with e-start. It's just, I don't know if it's worth it yet.
So I think it was right before COVID started or whatever, right as I think the bikes prices started going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking for a different bike, and I knew, and I rode somebody's 250F, CR250F,
okay.
And I was like, I don't know that this is really going to be much different for me than the 300. So I started looking, and I was actually looking at a CR250, and the guy sold it just before I was going to go look at it. He was like, well, if the guy doesn't buy it, I'll let you know. Yeah. The guy doesn't buy it, I'll let you know. Okay. So, then I come across this guy selling this 06 450, and I went to his house, and this guy is like Mr. Meticulous with everything. That's something you like to see. Oh, this bike was brand new. He come wheeling it out of the garage, and he's setting it up, and he had a towel in his hand. He wiped it off. And he's quite a bit taller than me. And he looks at me, he's like, you want me to start it for you? Ride it around? He goes, let me show you how to start it. I was like, okay. And you got to get it to this certain point, and then, just give it hell. Okay. So, right. So he started it for me, and I rode it around his yard, but I was real, cautious about it. And I was like,
dump it in front of him.
This
either.
Thing is, dump it in his backyard. Whoops.
Ugh.
Sorry, buddy. Broke your
clutch. Well, never mind.
Yeah. Sorry, broke your clutch lever. Never mind. Have a nice day. No, it was pretty cool. Yeah. So then he had, he is a tall, skinny guy. And I'm short and stocky.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, I had Pro-Tec suspension set my shocks and my forks up for a 190-pound rider. I was like, oh, okay. And I remember from the days of, the technician and his buddies, the guy had the track out behind his house, them talking about this place that redid his shocks and forks. And I was like, if I remember right, this place is really good at that. So setting it up for your weight and putting all the right spring and all that stuff in there. And
right.
I was like, okay, so I weigh 180, so okay. So I was like, all right, yeah, this will work. Set up for somebody a little bit heavier than me, but no big deal.
All right.
And I tell you what, the first big jump I went over and got some air and landed, it's like a pillow. It's like,
oh, really?
I'm like, oh, this thing is awesome. Oh, yeah. The Kawasaki.
I was expecting you to say it about bucking off.
Oh, no. No, it's perfect. I kind of messed around with the compression or a little and the rebound a little bit, but I was like, this is cool. So
that's awesome. That's always fun to hear.
Yeah, so this kind of guy and the conversation I had with this guy was like, he goes, yeah, we ride the heck out of them in the summertime, and then in the wintertime we take them apart and clean them all up and do all the maintenance work on it. And
yeah.
I'm like, there's really only like rub marks from his boots.
Wow.
Really? And then he put one of those Recluse clutches in it.
Oh, now that would be more enticing for something like a 450 to have a Recluse on there.
And it's really cool because you can actually, if you have it in first gear, you can kind of come to a stop if you wanted with the clutch in, and then you can kind of just let it out. So you're not holding the clutch lever mm-hmm. in or trying
yeah.
to find neutral. And you can just
yeah,
sit there.
With that heavy clutch.
Just make sure you pay attention that you have it in gear. Because if you goofing around, you rev it off.
Mm-hmm.
Oof. Oh, yep. Okay, it's going. Yeah.
Cool.
But that took a little bit of getting used to, too, because you think it's going to let loose, and it doesn't. And
yeah.
I stalled it once going around the corner. And I thought, oh, this recluse clutch will kind of just hurt. No,
not necessarily. Not with that compression.
Oh. Yeah, no, it didn't do that. So that was
cool.
That was fun. So I've been having a lot of fun with that one for the last couple of years.
Right on.
And that's where we're at.
Sweet, man. Well, that sounds like a quite the journey you've had with not only automotive industry, but as well as dirt bikes. You've kind of been on a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was looking recently at a new 450, because like the guy I bought that one from, he said to me flat out, he goes, if this was electric start, I wouldn't be selling it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh geez, okay, this thing's a pain in the butt to start. And then I really did have trouble getting it going.
Right.
Because there's a art form to starting the thing. And if you don't know how to start it, don't think you're going to walk up and go kick, kick, brum. No.
Nope. Nope.
It's like you pull the fast idle, you twist the throttle three or four times, you get it to that certain spot, and then you kick it.
Like a secret combination of stuff you got to do.
Yeah, it's like left 32, right 15, you know what I mean? It's like, gosh. But now,
yeah.
And then when we went up north, I was worried about it the first time we went up north, and I told Mike, I said, man, I hope this thing doesn't stall. Because it's going to be a bummer to start, because I'm still having trouble with it. And then after I got it figured out, you go just a little past the little spot where he says you got to stop. You go just a little past. Starts up every time. Starts
oh,
right
cool.
up. Oh, cool. Every time. Yeah. So
nice.
I got it figured out. So it's a piece of cake for me to start now, but I don't think you're going to walk up to it and go, okay. But yeah.
That's
cool.
Thing
rips.
Awesome. Well, I hope this season treats you well. You can get out on that bike a whole lot. Well,
yeah, hopefully it warms up some so we can get it out more. I got it going.
Yeah, that's
other...
surprising to hear that it's cold up there, man. Not down here. We're sweating it.
Right.
Well, cool. Thanks for taking a minute to talk with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Devin, I liked it. Appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you have a story of your own that you'd like to share or like to hear on the podcast, please reach out to me on Facebook, on Instagram, or send an email to thedirtbikejournals@gmail.com. And please like, share, subscribe, write a review about the Dirt Bike Journals so that it will continue to grow. Once again, thank you for listening. See you next time.